Welcome to the Entrepreneur Hot Seat, where I talk to entrepreneurs and business people from all walks of life and all levels of success, from millionaires to the people who are just starting out, and everyone in between. My objective is not only to learn about their businesses and goals, but about their challenges and fears as well, all with the hopes of helping them and you find a pathway to success. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Entrepreneur Hot Seat. I am your host, Andy Storch, and I am really excited, absolutely pumped to be joined today by my friend, John Vroman. And John is an award-winning keynote speaker, an ultramarathon runner, host of the Front Row Factor podcast, and founder of the Front Row Foundation, a charity established in 2005 that creates front row experiences for individuals who are braving life-threatening illnesses. John is also the author of the best-selling book, The Front Row Factor, which I have read and thoroughly enjoyed, and the creator of many powerful experiences, including the Speaker Trainer Experience and the Front Row Dads Retreat, which I had the privilege of attending back in April of this year. John inspires others to live a life in the front row by teaching the art of moment making. And what I've most been impressed with John is just his humble, giving heart and just desire to leave the world a better place than he found it. And most importantly, John is also a husband and a father of two boys, Tiger, who is 8, and Ocean, who is 3. John, welcome to the Entrepreneur Hot Seat.
What's up, buddy? So good to be here.
Yeah, really awesome to have you on. I know you always excited to have a veteran podcaster like you on the line to participate, maybe give me a little feedback. But I've listened to you so much on your podcast. I've read your book. I was lucky enough to get the chance to meet you in person at the Best Year Ever event last year in December, and then spend some time getting to know you at the Front Row Dads Retreat in Austin. And just, like I said, really impressed with, you know, your humility and your heart and your leadership. And I also know you have many great stories to tell. So I was really excited to have you on here.
Oh, this is awesome, man. I love what you're up to. This is great. Anytime we're just talking about life, about family, entrepreneurship, all of that, I'm game.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So I'd love to just start with a little bit of your background, your origin story, if you will. Tell us, you know, where you came from and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, man. My story starts on a military base in Japan. Dad was in the Navy for 27 years and, you know, just traveled around for the earlier part of my life, every couple years popping in and out of a new city. I enjoyed that probably a lot more than my sister did. I think I was one for variety and that really suited me. And, you know, my story is that it was a pretty normal childhood, for all intents and purposes. But in high school, the wheels kind of fell off. That's part of the story, is I was really short and I wasn't growing. And then that physical, the lack of physical growth caused a lack of mental growth for me. Like, I gave that a meaning that I wasn't enough or I wasn't worthy. And that became my belief system. And that was really, that was a dark spot. Those were some really difficult years. Luckily, after that, I found a new peer group. And that's why I believe so much in surrounding yourself with great people, because that's what, you know, you could argue, if we really get into the story, kind of saved my life. And I don't say that lightly. I really mean that. You know, they saved my life. And that set off this path, the path of personal growth and empowered communities. And that domino continued through my 20s. Up until we started the Front Row Foundation in around my 30th birthday. In fact, it was my 30th birthday. I was at Jason Mraz when I had this idea of like living in the front row. That was a transformational year for me, because it was like the season of yes. And I just said yes to a bunch of things. And so now people most know me for anything front row related. So Front Row Foundation is where it all began. It all began with this charity that helps kids and adults who have a life-threatening illness see the event of their dreams. And, you know, dude, it's been a wild ride ever since. My whole life has been about serving people who are fighting for their lives and then telling other people what I learned from them. That's the summary. So, dude, I just went through 0 to age 42 in whatever time that was. It's super high level, but man, that's the origin story of how we ended up here today on the podcast.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I appreciate the brevity, but I do want to dig into a couple things there. One of the things you mentioned was you got into a lot of trouble in high school, that you had some problems based on your physical abilities. I've heard you tell this story before, that I think you said you were like 4'10 and 85 pounds at 15 years old, which
good memory. Course, that's exactly what it was. Yeah.
Is going to be, you know, for anyone, you're going to be, feeling inadequate and just ignored kind of by other kids in high school. And so I can see you kind of going down the wrong path. You mentioned that you found a new peer group, which saved your life. And we've talked about this a little bit on this podcast. I had, Matt Aitchison on.
Yeah, that's recently, right. Love him.
Episode 24, I
front
think.
Front row dad.
Front row dad, yep. Very similar story. Got in a lot of trouble in high school and college. Yep. And he mentioned that he consciously made a choice to change his peer group, citing the Jim Rohn quote, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." So what did that change look like for you? How did you change that peer group? Was it a conscious change? Was it more of the job? I know you went into Cutco maybe around that time.
Yeah. I think it's part luck and it's part intention. It's almost part necessity too, where, when I say the wheels were falling off, like things were rough. The stories just are endless, but I was drinking heavily. I remember I wrecked a car. I wrecked several cars in one year. One time I was, I crashed a car, ran from the scene of the accident. They put a warrant out for my arrest. It was like the wheels were just, I didn't do anything that's going to land me on Oprah. That it was like, I've never heard of any high school student doing that.
Yeah.
But I was definitely walking the line of
things. But this
things
is not that, the John Roman I know and love.
No,
it's amazing to hear that you're doing those things.
I was a very different guy. I was smoking a pack a day. I was drinking every day, 6 to 8 beers a day. I was playing pool to make money. I was literally like, that's how I sourced income by hanging out in the pool halls.
It was so you were an entrepreneur from an early age.
I craved freedom. It was for as long as I can remember. But what happened was, so there was a little bit of a necessity of like, I had enough moments where, okay, like I'll give you a specific one. When I crashed that car, I was early 20s, maybe late teens. I can't remember exactly now. It's going back 2 decades. But I remember my dad saying to me, the only difference between us having this conversation in person and from behind a prison cell wall or in prison is that somebody wasn't driving the other way on the road or walking the other way on the road when you lost control of your car. Because I was speeding and took a turn that was marked at 15 miles an hour. I took it at like 60. And I flew off the road and like crashed into this electrical box and I took out the power and we ran from the scene because we didn't, it was just ridiculous.
Wow.
But the thing is, when he said that, I started to get that my actions could really hurt somebody else. I wasn't worried about hurting myself. In fact, I think I remember being in so much pain that if I hurt myself, I was like, okay. I thought my life would probably end early. I was like, okay with that. I wasn't fulfilled. I didn't have a purpose at that point. And I thought it was fine if my life ended. What my dad pointed out was that my actions can affect somebody else in a major way. And I saw that. I had that vision that my being careless was going to really get out of control. So I think that was a part of the pivot. And then it was also that, I found Cutco. That's sort of this connection between a lot of our friends. And Cutco is this amazing company that I stumbled upon when I was 18 years old. And what happened, or 19, I was 19 at the time. And what happened was my buddy came home and said, I saw this ad for this job. And I went and applied for it. And the truth is, I got the job. And then quit right away because I wasn't ready for it. That environment was so, it was based on accountability and stepping up. And I had gotten to this point where I was trying to like BS my way through everything. I was trying to tell stories and lies and excuses I was always getting out of something. I was always trying to manipulate something. And this was an environment I couldn't do that in anymore. I always say that like the direct sales is oftentimes a truth serum because you have to set your own schedule. You have to find your own customers. You have to make it work. You can't, you can only make so many excuses before you have to just own up to your results.
Right.
That was really powerful for me. And when I finally got that point that I was responsible for my results in life, I committed. I said, I'm in. This is an environment I can grow in. I went to a couple sales meetings, and yes, they were kind of cheesy, and I was like, who are these people? But eventually I got caught up in it. Thank goodness. Because people used to say, you're being brainwashed. And I was like, yes, thank God I'm being brainwashed because my brain needs a good washing. And I need a new group. That's what happened. So it, you know, eventually you go from sitting in the chairs, listening to people tell inspiring stories to being in front of the room. And even if it's 5 or 10 people sharing your stories. And I kind of got excited about how I could become a different person every week. I could go out there and I could grow and change and I could see my results instantly because it was the type of business where you get back what you put in.
Oh, that's awesome. And it sounds like lucky for you that came along. And it also sounds like that may be one of the things that set you down on this path of getting more into personal growth.
It's no question. Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like part luck because my buddy handed me the paper and part... Right. You know, part intention because I took action on it. So
that's right.
I think there was a lot of things that happened at the same time, and it was a perfect storm for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm glad you said that because I think that in life, you know, a lot of times we need luck, we need things to come along, but totally. A lot of that is putting ourselves in the right position, our right circumstances, you know, going out and building relationships, meeting the right people. And then part of it is taking advantage of those situations when they came along. Like you, it sounded like you turned it down at first, but then you kind of realized that this is what you need. And then a lot of other people might've said, ah, screw this. I'm not doing this. This is too hard. I'm going to go do something else.
Yep. Yep.
So from there, the other thing I wanted to ask about is you started getting into this, you know, different peer group. What, and I know this is a question you like to ask on your podcast as well, what mentors or coaches did you have along the way and how did that make a difference for you?
Yeah, many. And I wish I could take time to thank them all. I tried at the end of my book, by the way, if you've seen the acknowledgement sections. It is the world.
Like as long as the book.
It's like, I challenge anybody to show me an acknowledgement section of any book that's longer than what we wrote. It's like 11 pages. Yeah. I really tried to honor the amazing people in my life that have mentored me. I think of people like, you know, the guy who hired me into Cutco, his name was Rich Plaskin. He was a great mentor. I think of guys like John Cain, who's a front row dad and one of my best friends to this day. He showed up very early on in my life and was the type of guy who I think he believed in me more than I did. He was the first guy I really remember totally forgiving me for the idiotic things that I've done and just making me feel like, hey, you don't have to be your past. You can be a new guy and I'm here for you. And I felt like, man, he's always been my corner man for as long when life was beating me up and I needed to go back and get somebody to help me get stitched up or, you know, or you know, cleaned off and just get back into the fight. He was my corner man the whole way through. I love that guy. I would take a bullet for him in a heartbeat. And he came into the picture. I think about people that I wasn't personal friends with, but guys that like Tony Robbins. I remember, you know, I tell this story, I wrote about this in the book, that, you know, I remember laying in bed one night and watching Tony Robbins and being like, are you kidding me? Like, come on. Like this is, he's stealing people's money.
Totally.
You know, do people really send their money in for some guy to be like, you can do it? But eventually, you know, I got to this place where instead of thinking, are his CDs worth $200? I said, am I worth $200 to find out? And that moment for me was huge because I had never been in a position to believe that I was worth finding out. I was living in a place of judgment and criticism and picking on Tony when really I should just be looking at it saying, hey, am I worth $200 to find out? I mean, the guy's got some pretty serious testimonials on that infomercial. I mean, listen, why don't I just try it? And that part of the season of yes, like what's possible? Let me just explore. Let me adventure. Let me see what's out there without judgment, without criticism, was very, very powerful for me. And eventually, by the way, I got connected to Tony. I wrote him a letter. He responded. He interviewed me for a book. Like that, I became part of his team, his senior leadership team. That was a really transformational part of my life. And my mentors, they were in and out of my life in different ways. But you know, I'd put Tony there, John Cain, and a number of other people. You know, I met Berghoff early on. You know, more than I don't know, more than a decade ago for sure. And Berghoff, John Berghoff, our mutual friend, for anybody who doesn't know who that is, Hal Elrod and I, these were guys that very early on became not only peers, but mentors. I think those are the best kind, right? Like, we were both telling everybody that we were each other's mentors. So I think that's a very powerful place to be in life.
Yeah, I love that. And I think I like the way you put that, because I think I have a lot of peers who also serve as mentors. You know, we take turns kind of mentoring each other.
Sure.
And the what you said about Tony is interesting too, because I think that's kind of a new concept for me, that I guess I always thought of a mentor as, oh, it's someone that you know personally, that you meet with them regularly. But I was also introduced to this concept recently that, you know, a mentor could be someone that you look up to that maybe you haven't met, but you're listening to their podcast or reading their books or listening to their message. You know, for me, it's interesting. You mentioned Hal Elrod, even though I was at Best Year Ever and the Front Row Dad Retreat, I've never had the privilege of meeting the man. But I look up to him so much. And I'm totally a super fan of him and the Miracle Morning. So I would consider him a mentor. And also I had discovered maybe Tony Robbins a little bit later in life than you, but I actually just made an investment just in the last few weeks. I bought 2 tickets to take my wife to Unleash the Power Within later this year.
Good move,
and,
man.
I am absolutely pumped, and I love the idea of, I still thought of it as, is this worth it? Even though I had talked to countless people who told me how amazing an experience it is. But thinking about it, are we worth it? And I think we definitely are worth the money to go to that event and learn.
Totally. 100%. Yeah. I think, here's the interesting thing. I think sometimes investing in yourself, regardless of what you get out of it, is actually where the transformation occurs. People often say, like, did the event transform me? I'm like, yes. But do you know where the real transformation took place? Is the minute I said yes. Because the minute I said yes, I was a different person. The minute I said yes, my life trajectory was different, whether I never stepped foot into that room or not. Now, being in that room is a game changer for sure. I think you should go. but the transformation's backed up all the way to the moment we commit. Because then we're a different person. We had to become a different person to say yes to that. And that would then ripple into all the things that we're going to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And I think, you know, I'm newer to this world of personal growth in the last couple of years. The first event like that I ever went to was the Best Year Ever event in December, where I met you. And I probably was different from the moment I finally convinced my buddy Dan to go with me and bought the tickets and said, okay, I'm going to this thing. I'm flying across the country. I'm going to go there. I'm going to get the most out of it. I'm going to enjoy it. I met some amazing people there, like you, Maddie A, and just a bunch of other people that I've built relationships with, started this podcast really kind of as a result of that. And so the impact has just been huge. Yep. So going back to that season of yes, you know, you mentioned that you said yes to spend, you know, investing $200 in yourself. You also mentioned earlier that you started the Front Row Foundation as a result of kind of this experience at Jason Mraz concert. And I've heard that story before, and I love it. So, you know, take us back to, you know, how did this all come about, and where did it go from there?
I think this comes back to contribution. And anybody out there listening, I would ask of you to say, on a 1 to 10 scale, where would you rate your contribution to the world? And I'm not talking about financially. I'm not talking about the number of hours that you donate to a charity or whatever. I'm talking about just how you feel about your contribution to the world. Where are you right now in the way that you perceive your impact on humanity? And for me, at this particular stage of my life, at age 30, I had a great job. I was making money. And I think this is a natural progression of human consciousness, right? It's like I sort of meet those needs. I have shelter. I have food. I have met my variety need. I traveled a little bit. I did some of the things that I wanted to do. And then you get to the point where you can only have so many nice dinners and glasses of wine before you realize, like, and this is cliche to say, because a lot of you hear people say it, it's like, is this all there is? Like, there's got to be something more. This can't be just about a filet mignon, a nice glass of wine, and another hotel in a different city. Like, that's all wonderful. I still to this day enjoy those things, but that has to be more to that. And I think that when we really get tuned in to who we are as human beings, we want to connect with others by contributing and making a difference. And how you define that, totally up to you. for me, I just didn't want to be the guy. And I thought, you know, again, this is, I say this not in judgment of people who go against what I say or what I do. I say, this is my path. Like, this is just, this is what it meant to me. I did not want to make a life where I spent all my years trying to make as much money as possible and then give it away later. I wanted to live a life where I was earning money and having fun and doing those things and giving, contributing along the way. And I think I feel like it's old school thinking to think about how your job is to make just so much money and be stuffed to the gills with everything that you want and then figure out later in life how to contribute. I think that's BS. For me, that became very clear. And I was like, oh man, this is what I need. So I started looking for it. And I started looking for, where did we want to contribute? I remember doing exercises to figure out, well, when I think about purpose, when I think about meaning for my life, how do I get clear about that? So I remember viewing like our world is either, and this is basic psychology, what we're moving away from or towards, right? And this is pain or pleasure. I was like, well, let me explore those. So what do I fear? What do I want not want in my life? I was like, I don't want to get to the end of my life and feel like I wasted it. I don't want my life to be, to lack meaning and significance along the way. And my greatest love was moments that we could celebrate. And I was like, man, there's a theme here. There's a theme about making the most of our time. And I was like, who could I serve that would value their time more than anybody? And I was like, somebody who's been told that they might be losing their life early, quote unquote, right? And I thought, that's a group I want to serve. I want to serve the people who feel like they might have their timeline shortened a bit. Because I felt very passionate about wanting to live a long, epic life. It just, you know, not missing out. I have a fear of missing out. And then the desire was to help create an experience for them where they felt witnessed and loved. I think I spent a lot of time in my life, Andy, not feeling witnessed and loved. I feel, and that's not a poke at my parents or anybody that was a part of my life. I wasn't even there ready to receive it. I wasn't there open and tuned in to get the love that was there coming my way. I felt insignificant, unloved, not witnessed, like I wasn't enough. And so now what I want to do is I want to be there for people in that way. That's the metaphor of the front row, by the way. See, a lot of people challenge my metaphor and they're like, well, if you're in the front row, you're still a spectator of life. And I'm like, I get it. I totally understand. I see what you mean. Be on the field, be in the game. I totally understand. And there are times in your life when there's no question that you will be. But there's also times in your life when you need to show up for other people. How about cheering somebody on? Where's the value in that? Where's the value in saying, what are your dreams? Let me lift you up. Let me put you as the center of attention. Like, there's value in that. We can't just always have the conversation about you being the rock star on stage. That's shallow in its depth of what's possible for life.
Then it's too much about you, and it's not.
That's too much about you. So all this is happening in my heart and in my head and in my soul, and I'm just like, man, we need to do something where we give back, and then the idea of the Front Row Foundation is born. Like you said, we were at a Jason Mraz show. We looked to the front. We saw people having the time of their life, and I was like, man, life is different in the front row, and that's it. And the whole metaphor is just get close to what matters. Like we always say, like, look, you can't always choose your seat in life, but you can always choose to have a front row experience. We often say, if you don't like your seat, change it. But the metaphors are all about showing up. The metaphors are about making the moment. The metaphor is about getting close to what matters to you, the people, the places, the thoughts. That's what this whole thing is about. And imagine that Front Row Foundation is like Make-A-Wish meets Tony Robbins. See, the thing about that we wanted to be different, or how we wanted to be different about the Wish organizations that we knew of, and this isn't a poke about them, this is just about how we're different or our identity, is about it's a forever thing. When you become part of our community by that one day, you become part of a community that believes living life in the front row isn't about a moment, it's about all of our moments. It's about a lifestyle for all the days, no matter how many we have. And that's it, man. It, clearly, you can tell I'm passionate about it. There's no secret behind that. But
you don't get excited about this stuff at all.
This stuff, and I could talk about it forever. You know what? That's when I knew that I was onto something, is I really tapped in. I was like, I never get tired of talking about this. I never get tired of talking about how people can engage in their lives, because if there's a reason I'm on earth, it's to help people to remember to be in the moment. And to use their hope for the future to bring power to the present moment, to use their celebration of the past to the power of the present moment. If you're an entrepreneur listening, which chances you are, that I would ask you to look at that for your entire life, all the categories. Look at it for your personal life, look at it for your family life, look at it for your business, right? All the important categories for you. How are you in the moment so you're actually experiencing this thing? Because listen, Andy, a lot of entrepreneurs, they're so good at being visionaries. They're so good at anticipating the next thing and planning the next thing, starting the next thing. They actually suck at living in the moment. They really do. And you know, it's interesting. Do you know that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with feeling fulfilled, even though they have this freedom and whatever? They struggle because what happens is they set an expectation that's so high, so epic, so amazing, that when they actually live their experience, it never lives up to what they actually want. And it's actually pretty funny. We're always hoping for something. And then when we get there, it's like me in New Year's. I'm like, this is gonna be the best New Year's ever. It's gonna be epic. And then on New Year's Day, I'm like, I'm always slightly dissatisfied because I've painted the picture in my mind. I've set an expectation that it needs to be so amazing that I actually don't get it. I'm actually not even there experiencing the best of what is.
Yeah, I've had plenty of experiences like that. I can totally relate. I was just on the phone with a friend yesterday telling him a story about how I grew up a huge Cubs fan and the only place I ever wanted to go was Wrigley Field. And the first time I went there, it was kind of underwhelming. I think I just built it up so much.
Dude, that's
that it
right.
was going to be like a heavenly experience. You know, angels were going to be floating around in the outfield or something. That's
right.
A movie about a different team. But, you know, but the next couple times I went, it was awesome. And I can see that about entrepreneurs. And when you get really ambitious, you get into this idea of, you know, setting goals and processes, and you're always working towards, you know, how do I get 1% better every day? And how do I improve? And, you know, spending time visualizing about this grand future that you want to achieve. And, you know, things that I've even learned, you know, from your friend Hal. And, but I've also heard him talk about, and you talk about especially, that you've got to stop to enjoy the journey sometimes, because life
right.
is about the journey. It's not about that destination.
Yeah. And so this is a very important point, because everything that you and I are going to do today, so you and I, we're sitting here on this podcast. There is, in history, two guys that were on a podcast when something happened and it was the end for one of them. You know, like that was it. It could be anything. It could literally end in a moment. And I think, listen, when you're out there, we talk about legacy, we talk about building, we talk about the future a lot. And what I always try to remind myself of is that, and this is especially important as a dad, two young boys, you know, 8 and 3, is like, listen, who said this? Gandhi said, or somebody who's credited for the quote of like, learn, you know, live as if you're going to die tomorrow, learn as if you're going to live forever. And this idea of like, how do we balance this concept of now and then? Because I don't want to live like this is my last day, because if it was really my last day, I probably wouldn't be doing some of the things I'm going to do today. I bank on the fact, right? But I also use the urgency of my mortality. Whenever I give a keynote speech, I have people pull out a notebook. You could do this if you're listening. Literally grab a notebook right now if you're not driving in your car. And all I want you to do is just make a little dot on the left-hand side and then write birth. On the other side of the paper, write another dot, write death, and then make that line across the piece of paper, and then recognize that, let's say, arguably, you live to be 100, just for a rough number, right? You live to be 100. You could roughly say you have 80 amazing years, let's say, that your health holds up to be 80 when maybe things start to slow down a little bit for you at 80. You might argue it's 90, whatever, and you make that little dot, and that's a life change right there, about 80, and then look at where you are right now on that line. And that's your entire life. And there is an end to it. The one thing that we all have in common is that, yes, we serve a charity that has people with life-threatening illnesses. Everybody on this call, everybody listening has a life-threatening illness. It's called being human, right? And and the interesting thing is sometimes we get in this, like, we'll live forever and we have all this time to build. And that's great, because it's good to know sometimes that we do have tomorrow to regroup and refocus. But imagine that, Andy, that you normally lived to be 300, and somebody came to you today and said, Andy, I'm sorry, but you've been diagnosed with something and you're only going to live to be 100. And if you imagine that as like that your timeline's been shortened a little bit, you might start to get more serious about your life. And I think that's just about becoming aware. See, mortality isn't meant to paralyze you. It's not meant so that I don't want to operate out of fear all the time. I don't want to operate with high anxiety. I do want to operate with urgency. And by the way, that urgency doesn't mean doing more. It means sometimes experiencing more. As an entrepreneur, part of the goal shouldn't be just producing more. And we get into this business of comparing ourselves with other people online. By the way, you want to know what one of the tragic things is for most entrepreneurs right now? Is comparing themselves to other people. Comparing themselves
totally.
To every other. It's the most tragic thing. I'm like, screw Facebook, screw Instagram. Like, get off of that stuff and start living your own life in some ways. Now, by the way, those are tools I love. And, you know, I get like, you know, Yeah. But anyway, I share all this because listen, this whole thing, Andy, is about being able to live in the moment and be proud of our life, where we are, not comparing it to others, yet with a sense of urgency to create and experience along the way. That I think is a successful entrepreneur. Not the one that makes it to the magazine, not the ones, and I get all PR is great, and I get money's great, and I get all that stuff, but I think it's truly, at the end of your life, is about how you feel about the journey along the way. You got to get there.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm as guilty as anyone of, you know, I love keeping in touch with people on social media and talking to friends, and you know, seeing what they're doing and being envious. I've got the FOMO and, you know, comparing myself. I try to enjoy the journey I'm on. By the way, I had a short conversation with a friend just this week that kind of brought me back there, who is a prosecuting attorney in Missouri, and he was talking about just being in the courtroom with these guys defendants who show up drunk to court. And I said to these other guys, I said, you know, we're always comparing ourselves to other people online thinking we're not good enough. But, you know, I think I could show up to court sober. So, you know, we're doing better than a lot of people out there.
Yeah. Well, I've heard, what did I hear somebody say not too long ago? I heard somebody say, if you want to be successful, hang out with people that are better than you. But if you want to be happy, hang out with people that aren't.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I want to jump on this idea of entrepreneurship. So that's what this podcast is about. You know, I love this idea of living in the moment. And by the way, for anyone listening who's thinking, man, I have not done a very good job of that. I need to learn more about that. Get John Vroman's book, The Front Row Factor, because it is
Thank
all
you,
about that and the importance of living in the moment. I try to do that more, especially since I met you. But John, I know you also, you speak to entrepreneurs, you work with entrepreneurs, and you're passionate about that subject as well. What are some other things that you work with entrepreneurs on or speak with them about that you think is so important to be thinking about as you're on this journey of starting a business or trying to grow a business?
Well, when I talk to entrepreneurs, when I give a keynote or even when I wrote this book, I wrote this from an entrepreneur's heart to another entrepreneur's heart. Like this is, the whole journey has been about this. I wanted to mix purpose and profits. I wanted to make it so that my life wasn't about making profits and then going and searching for a purpose, but making it all sync and making it in harmony. So I think that what I love to talk about and the example is one of how do you set up your world so that everything works in harmony? You know, another great example of this as an entrepreneur is I was like, what do I value? What's most important? And every entrepreneur should be reconnecting to their values regularly. What do I care about? What is it that I love? What is it that I want to move away from? And just because you did some personal growth program 6 months ago, you better go back and do it again. Because if you're not constantly tuning into this, you're evolving. The world is changing. You need to constantly be checking in and seeing how have you shifted? How has your heart evolved? How has your mind evolved over time? And so I think getting clear about those values, we start to make moves. You know, we need to know how to let something go. You know, we get into habit. We're like, this is just the business I'm in. But what if it's not? What if you want to change? What if you want to pivot? Being in the Front Row Dads is a great example of that. It's like, what do I really care about right now? It used to be traveling the world and going out and seeing all these places. And I did that for 10 years. I'm a professional keynote speaker. I've traveled to all 50 states, you know, seen the world. And that's been a lot of fun. But as a dad now, I'm like, I need to do something that's a little bit different. I need to restructure my business. I need to check in with my values and say, how do I align all these? So Front Row Dads, this is so perfect, right? Now I get a chance to literally make money talking about something that I want to be thinking about anyway. And that's brilliant. You know, that's just like, as entrepreneurs, I think we need to be constantly asking ourselves, how does our world work together in harmony? And how, you know, that comes down to when I wrote the book, I told them that looking at people's lives, people that are fighting for their life, you can learn something about it. And that's how I sum up the book in one sentence. If you want to know everything you can learn about living life from people who are fighting for it, that's what this book is about. And here's what we found. There's three areas of focus that allow somebody to be a moment maker in their life, to make the most of all their moments. One is they're always asking, how can I make the most of what is? And we say, how do we make this a front row moment? So an example, I tell this story and I wrote about it, this toll booth lady, you know, you've heard me probably tell this story. So, and I'll tell your audience too, because it's an epic story. So years ago, I was driving down the road and I went to pay a toll. It's $3. It was in Richmond, Virginia. And it was a normal day. I paid this toll many, many times, except normally the people who collect my money, they don't even look at me in the eyes. They're just collecting money. It's like, it's just a routine, right? They don't have time to say hello. They kind of mumble at you under their breath. This woman, she collected my money. She looked into my soul. She like pierced my eyes and she paused and she said, how are you doing, sweetie? It was just the way she said it. It was so genuine, so beautiful. I was like, oh, I said, thanks for asking. I'm awesome. Never forget the way she asked me that question because it was so different. It was so unique. And then when I said, I'm excellent, she looked at me like I offended her and she got quiet. And it must have been only like 3 seconds, but that 3 seconds felt like forever because she just looked at me and she got quiet. I was like, what's coming next? Like, what did I do? Like, what's like, she looked like she was angry. And she said, no. She said, you are super fantastic. And she just got this big smile and she just threw her hand up in the air. And she totally caught me off guard. I started laughing and I was like, oh, I said, maybe I am. I don't know. And I just like, it was just an awesome exchange. Like she challenged me, right? She lifted me up. She was in my front row. She treated me like a rock star.
Yeah.
I drove down the road and I thought to myself, man, you know what? Does she do this to every single car? Did she do this to every car? Come on. Like, just put yourself in her shoes. Dude, 8 hours a day, 6 hours a day, whatever your toll booth shift is, like, there's no way that you did this to every car. But I thought, man, if she does, I'll bet you people take notice. She'll be famous somehow, some way. This is going big. This is going to go viral, right? And then I sort of forgot about her. Until I saw her in a commercial 4 months later. It was a McDonald's commercial and she's right there shooting out of the golden arches. And she said, just like she did at the toll booth, she goes, it's super fantastic. And I was like, that's the woman. And I was like, I was screaming at the TV. I was like, you're famous. You did it. And here's what I recognize. I recognize that there's some people that go through life, Andy. And what they do is they say, I work at a toll booth. What difference can I make? And then there's people that go through life and they go, I work at a toll booth. What difference can I make? And to me, that's what happens with our recipients. That's what happens with entrepreneurs is that we're either, you know, we're in a victim mode or we're in a, I'm going to create mode, right? I'm going to make this moment. And that's what I noticed about the happiest and most fulfilled people who are fighting for their life is that, you know, I see some entrepreneurs have everything going for them and they're miserable. And then I see somebody who's literally fighting for their life and they're some of the most fulfilled, deeply connected, have the most meaning in their world of anybody I know. And I was like, who's really wealthy here? Who's really living the epic life? Not the one that we're always posting on Facebook. And so I think that the first thing is our focus. It's where is our mindset? What are the questions that we ask in our lives? When we ask, what's the gift and the challenge? How can we make this moment possible? When we become masters of that, that to me is where it's all at. So we train people to ask, how can I recognize or create a front row moment in life? It doesn't always have to be front row at U2. You don't have to be going to the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight in the front row to be living a front row life. And we don't need to compare our seat with everybody else. So that's one piece of it. I don't want to ramble for too long, but you know, you could tell me where you want to go. The other two pieces, and I'll kind of tease you with them and you tell me if you want to talk about them, but I think it's good. And I dig into all these in the book and I really explain them and give you practical ideas of how to apply them. But the second one is who's in our front row. And we talk about that all the time. And this is the relationship piece is who's there in our front row, lifting us up. Who are our mentors and the people that are around us cheering us on? But one of the things I'll challenge everybody to do, and this is great for every entrepreneur, is you need to know your top eight. So in other words, you need to know who's in your front row. And also, we spend a lot of time asking ourselves, how can those people help us? How can these mentors move us forward? But I challenge everybody right now, do you know your top eight, first of all? And let's say in your business, as an entrepreneur, I'm not talking about your family or whatever. I'm talking about as an entrepreneur, your top eight relationships as an entrepreneur. But my question is, do you know their number one dream or goal? Whether it be for the summer, the year, their life, are you tapped into what they really are chasing in life? Could you tell me? If I ask them and then ask you separately, would you nail it? Because if you don't know your top eight dreams and goals, that's your next step. You hang up this podcast, you call those people and you say, what dream are you chasing? See, In the Front Row Foundation, we ask people what dream event, right? And we make that happen. So I feel good because I'm always helping people live out their dreams. That's the greatest equity in life is to know that we've helped people live out their dreams. We're integral. We are their number one raving fan. You need to know those people's top eight dreams and goals, right? So that's a philosophy that we teach. And we go all into that. And that's a big one. And then the final one is about environment. You know, because what we noticed was that for entrepreneurs, especially where they work, where they live, what culture their business is in, for recipients of our charity, it was always about they were having this magical moment because they were in an environment that was empowering for them. It's why my wife and I moved from outside of Philadelphia to Austin, Texas, because we got really clear about where we wanted to live and where I wanted to be connected to people and what energy source I wanted to be plugged into. If you want to live an epic life as an entrepreneur, if you want to live an epic life in any area, you've got to really ask yourself, how is my environment shaping my reality? Right behind me on this video, people who are listening on the podcast can't see, but there's a couch. And then next to it, it is a stack of books. I took the end table out and I put a stack of books there. And ever since I did that, I'm much more likely to read because I have a book within literally arm's reach of me. At any moment, there's a stack of books that are ready to be read. And I share that as just like these three philosophies, Andy, this is what we teach. This is what we learn from people who are fighting for their life. This is how it applies to all of our worlds. It's our mindset, the questions we ask. It's the relationships that we're around and the help and dreams that we're helping them fulfill. And it's also about shaping an environment, you know, that we, that helps us thrive, that makes us come alive.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love all of that. And I remember going back to that second one. I mean, I've heard you tell the Tolbo story, but I remember when we met up in Austin at the Front Row Dad's Retreat, and you mentioned, you were talking about how you have your top eight and you know your best friends' goals. And I was blown away by that. I've told other people about that and thought, you know, that's just amazing that you're so dedicated to helping them. And it reminds me, of course, of the Zig Ziglar quote, if you help enough people get what they want, you can get you want, right? And it's sometimes I just think about that in terms of like when you're networking and you meet people, ask them, hey, what are your goals? What are you trying to do? And see if I can help them. But really getting deep with your friends and knowing what they're trying to accomplish so that you can help them. And of course, that's going to come back around to you. They're going to want to help you as well. And then, you know, on this topic of the relationships, or actually really dreams and kind of what you're excited about, since we're kind of running out of time here, the last question I wanted to ask you, John, is something that I know you ask a lot of your guests, which is, you know, what are you most excited about right now? What are you pumped about?
Well, the first thing I would say is I'm pumped to be alive with my family in an environment where we can thrive. That's the thing I'm most excited about. That's my definition of success right now in my life, is to be a great husband, a great father, and to be in a space where we can thrive. That to me is ultimate success. I feel like it's a good goal because I can live up to that every day. So I feel like I'm achieving that dream and goal every single day.
Well, that's another one, by the way, when you hang out, you go to Front Row Dad's Retreat, you hang out with another awesome dads and you hear about things you're doing and you try to compare yourself. You're like, I really could be doing more.
No question, man. I mean, I think that's the challenge with that is it both inspires us and sometimes makes us feel like we're not enough. Yeah,
totally.
But you have to manage that emotion.
But it's a very achievable goal.
Yeah. Professionally, you know, I'll answer that as an entrepreneur. My goal is to grow the Front Row Dads. My goal is to build a community of guys who, look, there's lots of great communities out there and great communities for dads. And we know some of them. And I love them all. And I always say that, like, we just want to be us. You know, we have a special DNA. We have a special group. It's the guys that make up the culture in the community, and we love ours, and we want to keep growing that. We want to keep developing, and you know, our three things are: we got to have a brotherhood, we got to have a deep sense of purpose, and we got to have some strategy in there. And if I do that and I nail that, that's the big dream or goal that I'm chasing. You know, want to build that community.
Awesome, so cool. There's so many more things we could dig into. I want to get back on. I think we're going to have to do this again, but we do have to wrap things up. For anybody who's listening and wants to get involved, we didn't even get that much into the Front Row Foundation, but you know, I can tell everyone listening that it is a fantastic foundation organization that is doing just really, not only doing great things for the recipients that you mentioned, but also the way you're bringing people together into this community and having them help lift each other up. It's just fantastic. So for anybody that wants to get involved in that, or maybe even learn more about the Front Row Dads Retreat, where do people go to find out more information?
All at frontrowfactor.com. That's the hub for everything. You know, get a couple chapters of the book for free there. You know, get access to all the resources where we can help you and serve you. And let you know, there's a way to reach out and connect with us on social and direct through that site. So frontrowfactor.com.
Awesome. Frontrowfactor.com. Check out the book, The Front Row Factor, the podcast of the same name. And of course, if you're a dad and you're interested in attending the Front Row Dad's Retreat, I went in April. It was a fantastic experience. Highly recommend it. So anyway, John, thanks so much for coming to the Entrepreneur Hot Seat. I really appreciate it. This was a blast. The time went by so fast. And I'm glad to call you a friend and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, buddy. True honor. Hope you and all your listeners had a great experience today. And definitely encourage some, you know, any of them to keep connected to you and what you're doing. And also, if there's any way I can serve, don't hesitate to reach out.
Awesome. Take care, man.
All right, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Hot Seat. You can find more information at entrepreneurhotseat.com or my personal website, andystorch.com. Please don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. And if you have any questions or comments, or if you are looking for ways to take your life and business to the next level, you can send me an email to andy@andystorch.com. Take care.